Well, our guest speaker this morning and next Sunday, Dr. L. Brunsting, is an accomplished optical physicist and engineer. He received his PhD in physics at the University of New Mexico and has served on the faculty of Auburn University. Dr. Brunsting holds 15 U.S. patents and more than 50 foreign patents. His work has contributed to fiber optic communications and medical instrumentation. Like his co-author, Dr. Tom McFall, Dr. Brunsting has long been interested in how scientific discoveries affect religious faith. Dr. Brunsting, we welcome you and eagerly await your insights about God and randomness.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. 2.5 years ago, I was here to give two presentations on our first book, God is Here to Stay, Science, Evolution, Belief in God. And this is our second book in that series. My partner and co-author, Tom McFall, is a, you can think of him as a humanist, religious emphasis in our partnership here. He has been a professor at the university level and taught courses on comparative religions. And I have gained many insights in our partnership with him. If you survey the science religion book space, as Tom and I have done, I don't think you'll find another partnership like ours where Tom represents the religious humanities side, which is certainly one way of accessing the ultimate reality that we all seek. And I represent the scientific side. And together, what we want to do is merge those two emphasis on together to give a coherent story that is true to both of those spaces there. Now, today we adjourn at noon, and my plan is to complete my presentation by 11:45, maybe 11:50. I'll shoot for 11:45. But then I want to have time for questions and comments from you, and I hope there will be. The last time I was here, there were excellent questions here. And also, Tom and I will hang around afterwards, too, if we want to continue the conversation. If you don't get, if we can't get to your question, we'll try to get to everyone's question or comments, too. I'll give you the basic idea of this book in a little thumbnail summary here. The basic idea is we see randomness in almost everywhere we look. If we look at our own lives, and Tom in his presentation last week had three stories from my life that illustrate randomness, but those stories are given to merely stimulate our remembrances and our thinking about our own lives and the appearance of randomness in those lives, in our lives. If we think of history, of human history, and we have five examples of that taken from the 20th century that illustrate randomness in human history. Today and next week, we're going to take a look at some of the randomness we see in the world around us at very small scales, at size scales, at ordinary size scales that you and I live in, and at very large scales. And what we see is a randomness throughout those size scales. Next week, we're going to focus on the time dimension, the randomness we see throughout time, starting at the Big Bang, which occurred 13.8 billion years ago, and continues on today. So It's not that our entire existence or the entire natural world is random. There's a there are natural laws that bring some order into our world also. We have the law of gravity. We have Maxwell's equations that describe electromagnetic fields, charge densities, and charge motion. And there are other natural laws that are accepted today, like the standard model for subatomic particles. So my suggestion is the way to think about this business of randomness and natural law is to think about your radio tuned in to an AM radio station, and you drive 50 miles from the broadcast tower. And when you turn your radio on, you're going to hear some music, but in the background, you're going to hear some static, okay? So I encourage you to think of that static as the randomness that we're talking about, but the music is being more like the predictable laws. Randomness, in our case, means the absence of predictability here. And when I'm done today, I want each of you to be convinced that there's a substantial amount of randomness in our natural world, especially as it relates to space, from the very small to the very large. And next Sunday, we'll look at time, the time dimension. Time and space are kind of the two basic fundamental dimensions that we exist in. When you publish a book, you'd like to get as many people engaged in the themes of your book and get your message out. One way to do that is to ask a number of people to endorse your book. On this book, we have 10 endorsers, and I want to just lift up this one endorser here, Alice McKenzie, who has a national opinion leading professor right here at Perkins School of Theology, just a couple blocks away from where we are right now. And she has been a person that's encouraged us a great deal. I know we got two screens here, so if I turn to this one, it doesn't mean I'm ignoring this part of the audience here. God and Randomness challenges readers to rethink their assumptions about randomness using a lively writing style that draws on autobiography of the authors and their profound knowledge of history, science, and religion. Alice McKenzie, Levan Professor of Preaching and Worship, Altshuler Distinguished Teaching Professor, Director of the Perkins Center for Preaching Excellence, Perkins School of Theology, Southern Methodist University. I'm proud of that endorsement. There are other endorsements too. One of them comes from Francisco Ayala, who is the 2010 Templeton Prize winner. Templeton Prize has a monetary award that's almost equal to the Nobel Prize. So I mean, it's pretty close to a Nobel Prize, and he gave us a really nice endorsement also. Okay, moving on. I want us to focus on a little scale that I drew here, which is this one right here. So on that side of the room, this is on the left side, it's the vertical line here. And these large, thick marks here represent factors of 1,000 in size or distance here. This one starts up here at 1 meter. And just above that, we have a little icon of a human being up there to show you about what size that is. Just below 1 meter, we have a basketball. 1,000 times less than a meter is a millimeter. And just below a millimeter, about the width of a human hair, which is 80 microns, that's approximately the limit of what we can see. Going down even smaller, there's a micron, which is 1,000th of a millimeter, 1,000,000th of a meter. And if you take the best research grade light microscopes, they can resolve roughly 300 nanometers or so. So that puts a best light microscope right here on that part of the scale. And then continuing down, then something kind of, something really strange happens here at 1 nanometer here. Below a nanometer, you have carbon atoms and the other subatomic atomic and subatomic particles that exist in this size range. The interesting thing that happens here at 1 nanometer is that's where something called quantum mechanics becomes important, whereas up here, it's called classical mechanics here. This is not a physics class. There won't be, you won't see a single equation here this afternoon. But think of classical mechanics as like a billiard table with billiard balls on the felt. And if you know the impulse that the cue delivers to the cue ball and where it goes on the cue ball to develop the spin and so forth, the interaction between the cue ball and the felt on the table and so forth, you know all that, then you can predict exactly how the object ball, where the object ball is going to go and where the cue ball is going to go and any other subsequent encounters on the pool table, okay? That's classical mechanics. I'm very accurate determination of how things work out. And that was the dominant thought of how the world works up until about 1920. And in 1920 to 1930, 1935, scientists started to realize that there was something called quantum mechanics at smaller sizes here. Now, let me just say a couple words about quantum mechanics here. The atoms and molecules that exist at the quantum mechanics sizes, 1 nanometer or less, behave in a very fuzzy, unpredictable, random nature. You can't predict it. Let me give you an example. Let's say you're watching a baseball game. The big league pitcher throws a fastball 90 miles an hour to the plate. There's a radar gun that measures the speed, and there's a camera that measures the location of the ball, of the baseball, coming toward home plate. If we were to collapse that situation down to the size where quantum mechanics becomes important, the baseball, believe it or not, this is highly non-intuitive, the baseball has an uncertain position and it has an uncertain velocity here. There's a fuzziness that comes into play as you get to smaller sizes here. So it's very non-intuitive. And I want to say a couple more things about quantum mechanics here, because the idea here in my presentation today is to start at the very small and show that randomness occurs there and progress up to the very large here. All of the matter that we have, all the atoms and molecules in our body, the chairs we're sitting in, the carpet, this room, the walls of this room, all are made up of atoms and molecules at a small enough size scale obey these fuzzy, non-intuitive, random characteristics described by quantum mechanics here. Now I want to take a little interlude here. So let's say you're thinking, okay, there's a lot of randomness in my life, randomness in the world we live in. Let's just get to the bottom line. Give me the punchline here. Okay, I submit to you that there are three punchlines that you can consider, three options, fundamental options, okay? There are lots of options, but I mean, I contend it boils down to these three. The first option here, answer number one, is that God doesn't exist. The randomness is due to pure materialism and associated randomness. It's a no-brainer. So the whole universe, everything we live in, it's just all material. There's no reality beyond the material. It's just, and so it's a no-brainer. So now, my comment on that is that answer can be used to solve the randomness question. However, it introduces some serious other problems, which in my opinion are more serious than the solution it provides. The first problem that's introduced with this atheistic kind of answer, answer number one, is that we live in a life-friendly universe. The laws of nature, the constants that are embedded in those laws of nature, are all life-friendly. And there have been calculations done that if you change the constants by a little bit off the knife edge, all of a sudden, either way, plus or minus, the universe becomes unfriendly. This is called the anthropic principle. And this is recognized, I think, pretty universally among cosmologists. So then the second comment I would have is that the natural laws that we do have, for example, the Standard Model, the General Relativity, and the other models that we use to describe the universe that we live in, are all very mathematical, very many people described as beautiful. So if it was all random at the beginning, all chaotic at the beginning, you certainly wouldn't expect the beauty that shows up in natural laws here. So those two facts, plus some others, but I don't want to spend too much time on that. But those two facts argue against the atheistic response. The second response is, I would call answer two, is the agnostic response. The agnostic response is, we can never know. We can't know if there's a God or not. What do we know? Okay? My comment on that is a give-up position. We can't know. We just throw up our hands, give up, okay? I claim that we humans are all curious people. We want to know how stuff works here. We're in it to find out, to use our best intellect to find out how it works. So that runs counter to a give-up position of answer two. I would point out another example here is the Higgs boson was discovered at the CERN Accelerator Lab in 2012. That lab was built at a cost of $1 billion+, and it depends on the cooperation from scientists from many countries around the world, highly cooperative effort. And through a great deal of energy and a great deal of effort, they were able to determine signals in their data that pointed to this Higgs boson, which was critical, which was needed in the Standard Model, the last element in the Standard Model that was needed to complete that. So if you're giving up, you know, you probably wouldn't have advocated for the CERN accelerator, and you wouldn't probably have worked on the crunching the data that showed up at the Higgs boson. Answer three is the theistic answer, which is the one I would, surprisingly, here in church, I would recommend to you. All right? The theistic model also has problems, though, that we have to work through. It's not a straight shot. And Tom McFall summarized for you some three personal stories of mine, but you all have personal stories. In particular, if you look at something like the Holocaust, which was a tremendous disaster in the history of humankind, you'd certainly want to ask the question, where was God during the Holocaust? Okay, so even though there is this problem here that we have, that we don't understand how God might be engaged in our lives in the presence of all this randomness, and we got other, that's known as the problem of evil, by the way, and we still have this problem of evil, we're not out of the woods yet, but still, all things considered, I believe answer three is the way to go. Okay, just very quickly now, at the very small quantum world, randomness, fuzziness, unpredictable behavior, the very top line, if you're looking over here, I want to point out to you that this quantum picture of the world, which is so highly non-intuitive, turns out to be very commercially valuable. The technology that we involved, that has invaded our lives now, your smartphones, iPads, the high-def TVs you have in your family room, our family room, the navigation systems you have in your car, plus many other pieces of technology, at some point in their design depend on quantum mechanics to explain to in part of the design. Also, quantum mechanics helps us understand what goes on in the natural world around us. One example, the sun. So we're enjoying the sun today. No rain, okay? The radiation that comes from the sun has to do with the sun's thermonuclear fusion reactions that are going on in the sun. And those reactions depend on something called quantum mechanical tunneling, which if it didn't exist, we wouldn't be the beneficiaries of the radiation. We wouldn't be here, okay? So the understanding of the mechanism in the sun depends on quantum mechanics. Let's keep going here. Now, if we increase our size scale from the very small to where we are in our size scales, roughly a meter or two, okay? Here are some of the things that occur in our lives here. Weather, tornadoes, hurricanes, and ice storms. Now, I've heard it say, I don't live in a Dallas area, but I've heard it that you guys occasionally get some tornadoes and ice storms, okay? Everybody in the room, you know what to do when there's a tornado in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, right? The answer is everybody needs to go to the Dallas Cowboy football stadium in Arlington, Texas, because there'll never be a touchdown there. Thank you so much. Thank you. Okay, Tom, I'm done. Now, also, there's randomness in geology. For example, earthquakes, tsunamis, volcanic eruptions here. And then also there's randomness in accidents. There's lots of other randomness here. One of the worst natural disasters, that top line in blue, was a 9.1 earthquake that occurred in the Indian Ocean, very close to the island of Sumatra in Indonesia. And what happened in that earthquake was it was very large, had high amplitude. A large body of seawater moved under the ocean in response to the earthquake because of the plate it was on fractured at that point. And that produced a tsunami that had devastating effects that ultimately killed 250,000 people in that part of the world here. So the randomness part of that was the unpredictable movement of the Earth's crust. Hurricane Katrina in 2005 resulted in 1,245 deaths and $108 billion in property damage. So the randomness, the chaos, the unpredictability of these weather systems produces this. Another disaster occurred in Ireland from 1845 to 1852, where 1 million people died in Ireland, and another 1 million people emigrated to other parts of the world, many to the United States at that time. And what happened was there was a potato blight that mutated such that the potato crops in Ireland were all vulnerable, and the crops had very little genetic variability on them. So a little mutation in that fungus particle propagated over Ireland and had these devastating effects, and I'm going to call that randomness. There is lots of randomness in our solar system here, going to still larger sizes now, okay? Here's a nice little graphic that shows the first five planets. This little dot here represents asteroids, Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter. The distance from the sun is not to scale here, but just to give you an idea of how the sun exists relative to the other planets here. The sun itself produces random events that we don't fully understand. There is a solar wind that comes from the sun that sweeps out across the solar system. And if the Earth didn't have a magnetic field to deflect those particles, there would be a lot more damage from the sun to us in the absence of Earth's magnetic field there. Also, in the asteroid belt, where there are many rocks, boulders, small planet-sized particles here, can sometime come out of the asteroid belt and impact on the Earth, and there are other impactors that exist in the solar system that possibly interfere with us. Next week, we're going to talk about some of those impactors that have to do with extinction events. Getting still larger to galactic sizes, we have black holes. The current theory right now is at the center of every galaxy that we've looked at, there are what's called a supermassive black hole that draws in the matter around it. And this is kind of a random chaotic event that we know that it exists because there's radiation that occurs from that, which we can detect with our telescopes and spectrometers. What I want to mention here at the galaxy size is there are two processes that seem to be really important for us. One was supernovas. When the stars in their thermonuclear reactor generate radiation, they make new, in that fusion process, they make heavier elements, progressively heavier elements, and that goes up to lead, but stops at lead. Okay, there's no advantage, there's no energy produced when you get to lead. But in supernovas and neutron star collisions, these are methods that we now understand produce these heavier elements. The reason why that's important is that in those collisions that produced the atoms and dust and stuff that eventually went into forming our solar system, that went into forming the Earth, that went into forming most of the atoms and molecules in my body and in your body. So that's an important process. But it's basically random because after these collisions, the material is distributed in that local area, and we just happen to be circling a second generation star that has resulted in the Earth and life forming on the Earth 3.8 billion years ago. Okay. I know that the print doesn't show up, okay? But this is such a cool slide. Please forgive me for the absence of print readability here, all right? Here's what's going on in this slide here. So you have kind of a bell-like shape here, three-dimensional shape here. Going along this axis here represents time, okay? This spot right here, where our friends at Perkins School of Theology would say that was the creation event, cosmologists call that quantum fluctuations. And there are events that happen along this scale here. We don't have time to go through it all, but eventually you wind up to the current time here. This is a satellite here called the Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Probe. And this satellite was designed to look at this first afterglow that occurred right after the Big Bang occurred, about 400,000 years after the Big Bang occurred, so we can get information on that. Interesting part of this slide is that there's a curvature down as well as a curvature up, indicating the not only is the universe expanding, but that expansion is accelerating. Completely counterintuitive. That was discovered in the late 1990s. So you would think that gravity being only an attractive force, that there's no way that you'd be something that the expansion would be accelerating. So we don't know what that is, so we'll give it like a little placeholder kind of name, and we'll call it dark energy. But we don't know what it is. But this is a really nice summary of the history of how we got to where we are. We're running out of time. Here are, I don't really have time to go through this, but these next two slides have to do with pointing out the randomness that occurs at different size dimensions, at galactic size dimensions here. So this has to do with the cosmic microwave background. This one has to do with the stage one stars that eventually provided the raw material for our stage two star, which are described here in rows three and four, the blue and the black row over there, if you're looking at this monitor. So what I want to do is wrap it up. So what I've tried to just summarize is the next week, what we're going to talk about is randomness, Big Bang to Methodists. Here, from our solar system to people, origin of the solar system, origin of life, should take us 3 or 4 hours. So that's the plan for next week. So thank you very much for your attention. We have about 10 minutes for questions and comments. Yes?
The question I have is, kind of the universe is expanding, but then we got these black holes up there that are sucking out of the universe.
Right.
How does that work? Where does that go?
We don't know. What is the current idea is, because of the dark energy that's pushing the universe apart, overcomes the gravity of the supermassive black holes, the gravity of the galaxies, and the gravity of everything else that's in the universe. It's the dark energy is overcoming that gravity to produce this accelerated expansion. That's the idea. It's not satisfying because it hasn't been pinned down. There's not a good explanation for it.
Can I repeat the question?
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. The question was, with the black holes attracting matter into the black holes, how can we have a universe that's expanding, the expansion is accelerating? How does that occur? And the answer is, we don't know. We'll call it dark energy and pretend that we know. But since I'm retired and I have no continuing links, professional links with a scientific society, or their affiliations here, I can say whatever I want, okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you the truth. Yes?
So when you were talking about the third answer, right? The,
yes.
The theistic answer.
Right.
In this idea of intelligent design in a system that has both predictability and randomness, mm-hmm. How is it not just a deistic design, that there is a God. God threw it all out there and said some things will go in this pattern, and some things, whatever happens. How do you get then anything other than a deistic explanation in this sort of randomness that you're...
World that we live in, and looking at the three options that we looked at earlier there, and my recommendation to go with option three, the theistic option, how was it that God created the world with the embedded randomness? Is that?
No.
It's not.
My question is, okay, we've got God exists, but this description of everything as, you know, he had a plan to put some things that are not random. We can predict the classical
right.
physics, some things that are quantum physics that are, mm-hmm. that are okay. How then is there a presence beyond the watchmaker, the deistic kind of theology in that theistic third option? Because there's that third option comes embedded with a number of other
disadvantages
or options for,
yes, yes.
For how you explain
right.
the nature of God, right?
Yes. So how do you explain God with answer three in the presence of everything else that we know about the world we live in? Something like that.
Something like that.
Okay.
How do we not just distill it down to deism? Here it is. I made the watch. Now the watch just runs with
right.
all
that's,
of the stuff.
That's a deism
right. how do you,
approach.
How do you not distill it down
okay.
to that?
Yeah. In chapter 9, the last chapter that we have, we provide a speculation that helps to answer that question. It's not a speculation that's going to answer everything. It's a speculation that I think will help us on our faith journey to reconcile the randomness that we have in this world with the order and the natural laws that we have in this world here. So, Jennifer, I encourage you to stick around for the last presentation.
To be continued.
Or, if you can't do that, there's some books back there.
Buy the book. Buy the book.
This is just blatant hucksterism, okay? And I admit it. Thank you for your question. Yes.
So, how do you define randomness? And to flesh it out, what's the distinction between randomness and simply not having an explanation yet?
That's a good question. The question is, how do you define randomness and not having an explanation yet? That question has consumed a lot of energy from the atomic physics people and when they're studying quantum mechanics. And the question was phrased a little differently, called the hidden variables hypothesis, which is that if you really understood quantum mechanics better, you would understand that there are some other variables at work here that would really understand the randomness. And there have been conclusive evidence, data taken that show that there are no hidden variables. There really is this fundamental randomness there. Now, there's other events like the tsunami in the Indian Ocean. If we knew exactly the details of the plates, the Earth's plate there, and we knew how it fractures, then we could possibly predict that earthquake. So I admit that there are those opportunities to learn more, but for our discussion now, I think it's fair to say now that there does exist randomness at our size scales, although we still have a lot more to learn, like that tsunami. Yes, Jim.
Thank you. In your diagram, your Bell diagram, you have a point of origin, and then you have an expansion that goes out in a bell shape.
Right. Nope.
Are you assuming that the point of origin is linear?
That one. Here's the idea, Jim. The idea is that space and time are all intertwined together. There's you can't really separate them so good. So that when you have what the Big Bang occurred, where it's supposed, this is unbelievable, but where all of the mass and energy of the universe were contained in that tiny little singularity right at the time of the Big Bang, that also all of space and time were contained there. So even though it looks like we can talk about the universe expanding into some other greater space, that's not really the way it is. All of space and time are contained inside this bell here. That's the idea here.
It was like firing a shotgun.
That,
where you have a point of origin and it all goes in one direction.
Yes.
And once it leaves,
yes.
The barrel.
Shotgun. That's a good Texas metaphor. Yes. Right. It's going in one direction in the sense that there's this time, this is the way it's plotted, there's this time axis here. But at the time of the Big Bang, if you think only of space, like in fireworks, yes, it would be more like a firework and not a shotgun, all the BBs going in one direction. Okay?
You and Mr. McFaul with this randomness, doesn't go along with our Christian friends who said that God plans everything in our lives and everything that happens, and a little boy who has retinal cancer, God didn't make that happen. He, in his greatness, he allowed it to happen. So it looks like what you're saying is God didn't make all what's going to continue to happen. He allows randomness.
God,
let
me see if I can summarize that. God allows randomness, and so that seems to be inconsistent with other Christian ideals that we have. Is that a fair summary?
The people that say God plans our lives, everything is already laid out in his greatness.
It turns out, that takes us directly into the problem of evil. It turns out that if we believe in a God that's all-knowing, all-loving, all-powerful, those three characteristics, and then we map out a logic table on can evil exist, the answer is for each option that, for all three of those assumptions together, that evil cannot exist, but if you relax one of those three options there, you can, evil is possible to exist. So what we are contending in our last chapter is a response to that, of how we can better understand it, not perfectly.
Unfortunately, she has to go back to Kansas.
I know, buy the book.
Yes, Tyler.
If there is that randomness, just because it's random to us doesn't mean that there's still not some divine power behind it.
Right.
And that could even be a conduit for divine action.
Yes.
Just because we don't understand it doesn't mean it's not behind some divine framework, right?
Right. I completely agree with you, Tyler. Yes.
God gave us choice.
Yes.
If there'd been no choice, maybe there'd been no randomness, but you can't have both. So the very fact that we are able to choose good or evil or choose to believe or not believe.
Okay.
That maybe goes hand in hand with there has to be some randomness.
Because there's a free will element in our existence, that kind of brings in evil into our situation. Is that a fair statement? Okay. I would say to that is that's probably true in some of the cases, but not all the cases. Because there is a natural randomness that occurs too. So for example, in 65 million years ago, when there was this impactor that struck what is now the Yucatan Peninsula, that wiped out all the dinosaurs and created a huge environmental niche for mammals to come in and thrive and develop, and we wouldn't have been here unless it was that, probably that impactor that occurred there. So I would encourage us to think about the natural causes, sources of randomness also, in addition to the free will causes. We are at noon, and I don't want to interfere with the schedule here. Is there a... Okay.